You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 6th of May, a Donovan Mitchell deep dive. Let's see where it takes us. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, lots of geeky numbers, and hopefully making it a better fan experience for you. Thanks to everybody sticking with us during the offseason. There is no offseason for the real, true fan out there. We'll do an interview series coming up. I'm going to travel in the middle of June, but we'll be around for a lot of it, and then we'll do another interview series late in the year and carry you all the way back to September when the guys get back into town. So we're not planning to take a lot of time off. We appreciate you very much for tuning in. We appreciate our sponsors for sticking with us. Really appreciate you because the audience numbers don't dip at all in the summer. Hard time to get in as a sponsor, but we do have a few spots available. So if you're interested in being a part of this program and having a slot that starts when the regular season gets going again next year, email me at dlocks09@gmail.com. That's dlocks09@gmail.com. All right, fun stuff here. I want to thank you. I thought last week was really, really fun. I'm kind of a regimented, orderly person at times, despite the way my office looks, in the sense that I kind of have it all written out. We're going to do Rubio this day. We're going to do Dante and Howell the next day. We're going to do this, and this is how we're going to carry it through. And then we didn't. We did Rubio, and then that led into this conversation, which then led into the next conversation, which then led into the Fours conversation, and it was kind of awesome. And that's kind of it. Your ideas spurred a lot of that. The email was Tuesday's show, and so anything like that where you guys have a thought, feel free to email me, same dlock09@gmail.com. And if it sparks something, that would be really great. So let's just hopefully we'll roll with a few more weeks like that. I thought that was a really, really fun week. They're all timeless too. So if you missed them, you want to go back, you're going on a long run or a ride or just going to sit in the office and listen, you can do that as well. Few thoughts on the NBA playoffs. Warriors-Rockets series is really good. Those two teams are, I think it's clear, are better than us. The Nuggets Blazers series is interesting to me because it's the Jazz play defense, and so therefore there's just no way Jokic is rolling as free or Murray's getting as many looks or some of the aspects to what Portland's able to do against Denver would be taking place if we were playing one of those two teams. So it'd be a very different series. However, I really got to say that I think both those teams have two things that are really admirable. One is they both have an incredible spirit. And I get very nervous when I hear us as a fan base or anytime our front office starts talking about as though we have the market cornered on camaraderie, chemistry, spirit, DNA, those kind of things, because we don't. And if we do think that, we'll make mistakes. Or we'll get beat because other teams have it too. Now, there's a bunch of teams that don't have it. Like, Phoenix clearly didn't have it. They're a disaster. Devin Booker's checking in for his... Like, that clearly doesn't exist. So there are teams that don't have it. But it's not mutually exclusive just to us. And I think that's a really important thing for us to remember as we evaluate free agency, as we evaluate where we stand. We've got special stuff. Right? We've got great ownership. We have a superb front office and we have a genius coaching staff. Okay. I'm not trying to weigh any of those more than all three of those are terrific. We don't have the market cornered on that though. Does that make sense? Like Tim Conley in Denver is awesome. Mike Malone's doing a hell of a job in Denver and has got these guys playing with the spirit. Like we have a really wonderful ownership group. Dennis Lindsay and Justin Zanuck and David Morway and the staff of hundreds that work under him from Fredman to Perrin to Taylor to Mealy to all the guys are remarkable. Quinn Snyder's staff is elite in the effort they it's incredible. But you don't have the market cornered on it. And I think that's important. Because you watch Portland and you watch Denver, there's a real spirit to what they have. The other thing I would say on Portland and Denver is the amount of shot makers. Now, if we're playing them, is it a little different because of the fact that there's a defensive prowess to what we're doing that's a bit different? Maybe. Maybe they aren't as free. They aren't as rhythmic. They aren't, maybe. But boy, do they got some shot makers. And the offensive ratings in this series, again, are real. But the concern I had all year long for the Jazz, and they did a pretty darn good job against Houston in being able to do this, is that the offenses have become so great in this league that even if you have a great defensive game, it's hard to get our offense up to it. Last night, the offensive ratings were a 124 and a 120. I mean, that's insane. The shot making that went on last night was just remarkable. Offensive rebounding, which I've been preaching, is becoming more and more important. Both teams were over 30% last night. That's why those offensive rebounds. Now, we're the number one defensive rebounding team in the league. So that's really vital. This is where, and this digs into the whole favors debate. Favors is one of the reasons why we're the number one defensive rebounding team in the league in the Favors-Gobert combination. And then yet, simultaneously, the other thing I just told you is, boy, these teams are incredible offensively. If you're not really skilled offensively, it's hard to keep up. They just have shot makers, right? They really, whether it's Seth Curry or Rodney Hood is making shots in the series, or Will Barton, or frankly Malik Beasley, who's a pretty good little shot maker, and he's hardly playing in this series. And then I'm a big Gary Harris fan. He didn't have a very good year. But Jamal Murray, I mean, they've just got shot makers. So that jumps out to me from the series. All right, let's do our deep dive today. Our deep dive today is on the great Donovan Mitchell. Let me say a few things before we start this. I'm doing this just by numbers. We're just going to tell the truth. Donovan is great. Donovan is going to be great. Every indication of Donovan's going to be great. There's some areas where he must improve. We will see those. There's some areas where I think his mixed position, one or two, might cause him a little bit of difficulty just in how he fits for the rest of his career, and he's going to have to figure that out. But this guy is great. Now, we're going to dig into the numbers. And there'll be some things that aren't great here, but he is great. All right, what was the difference between this year and last year? His minutes played were about the same. He took 2.5 more shots in the same amount of minutes, about the same amount of threes. The 2.5 minutes of more was shot were all twos. It's interesting. He took almost all these shots were twos. He went to the free throw line more from 3.8 free throws to 5.1. His assists were up. His rebounds were the same. His steals were the same. His blocks were the same. His points per game were up. Turnovers, exact same. Personal fouls, exact same. A lot of similarities. Played 77 games instead of 79. Obviously started all of them. Per 36 minutes, his scoring's up 3 points, but so are his shots up 3 points. Everything else is pretty similar. Really interesting how a lot of these numbers are pretty much the exact same. Steals, assists, rebounds, free throw percentage, 80.5, 80.6. 3-point shooting percentage up from 34 to 36. Pretty cool to see. His advanced stat numbers, his rebounding percentage, the exact same. His assist percentage up 2 percentage points. Steals, blocks, turnovers down a little bit. Usage was up, 31% usage. It's a lot to ask. Second-year players with a 31% usage. I am telling you, there cannot have been a lot of them in the history of the game. I was not prepared for that, but the thought just crossed my mind. I don't know if I can find it really quickly. I'll see if I can. 31% usage in your second year in your career. I'll be curious to see if I can find. I am looking for it right now. courtesy of the great basketball reference, greater than 0.31. Let's see what we find. Any season, second year in the career. Joel Embiid, Donovan Mitchell, Michael Jordan. And Jordan only played 18 games. It has only been done twice. Joel Embiid and Donovan Mitchell are the only players to ever have a usage of 30 in their first year. Excuse me, in their second year. And actually play. Like, there's a bunch of guys. I mean, this is where Donovan gets pretty different. I mean, let's just start backing this up. We're going to take it. Now let's go 30 usage. This is going to be worth the whole show. The only players to have a usage of 30 or better. That means you use 30% of the possessions while you're on the floor. The only players, Dwayne Wade, Joel Embiid, Kyrie Irving, Donovan Mitchell. Kyrie Irving's team won like 5 games. Joel Embiid's team won like 5 games. Dwayne Wade might have actually gone to the NBA Finals that year with Shaq. Wade to Mitchell, Donovan Mitchell to Dwayne Wade in their in that year. Wade played about 400 more minutes. Donovan actually shot a bunch more, but Wade went to the free throw line 2 times as many times. Wade did not shoot threes, so Donovan's effective field goal percentage was better than Wade's. Donovan's free throw percentage, Donovan's true shooting percentage was not. True shooting percentage incorporates free throw shooting. Effective field goal percentage incorporates 3-point shooting. He's not crazy far off that season, though. Let's back this up again. I'm fascinated by this. This is not – the Donovan Mitchell deep dive may turn out to be a 2-day project. Let's go to 28% usage. See how many players suddenly show up now in their second year. Shaq, LeBron, Vince Carter, Dwayne Wade, Walter Davis, Kevin Durant, Sharif Abdur-Rahim, Mark Aguirre, Mal Mashburn, Joel Embiid, Kyrie Irving, Donovan Mitchell, Carmelo Anthony, Antoine Walker, DeMarcus Cousins. Freeman Williams. Loved him as a kid. Andrew Toney, coming off the bench for Philadelphia, was gunning. Linsanity does, but he only played a few games. Okay, so now we're into at least 17 players that have ever done this. And Donovan's win share is not great if you're sorting it by win share. His effective field goal percentage. Actually, wait a sec. I got to put another. Let me put another filter in here. Did I mention Durant? Durant's in here too. So guys that actually played, you know, 60 some odd games. Let me put another filter in there and we'll be able to look at this. Now we're into a larger group, right? So 28, but Donovan's usage is much higher than 28%. There's only 18 guys who've ever had a usage rate and played this many games. And in most recent order, they are Donovan, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant was on a terrible team. LeBron was on, didn't make the playoffs. Wade was on a good team. Carmelo made the playoffs. Rip Hamilton in Washington. Vince Carter, Sharif Abdur-Rahim, Antoine Walker, Jamal Mashburn, Isaiah Ryder, Shaq. And then we're into Liddell Eccles, Mark Aguirre on an expansion Dallas team, Andrew Toney in Philly, Billy Ray Bates in Portland, never heard of him, Freeman Williams, and Walter Davis. There aren't a lot of wins in here, would be the first thing. So Donovan's doing something different in the sense that he's doing this on a team that's winning games. Right? Devin Booker, Durant, LeBron, not a lot of wins. His effective field goal percentage puts him right in the middle of the pack at ninth. The best is Shaq, obviously, Walter Davis, Andrew Toney, Durant, LeBron. He's better than, he's right in with Vince Carter. Donovan Mitchell's second year number and Vince Carter's second year numbers are very, very similar. Except for the fact that Donovan shot 2 times as many threes just because the era was different. But otherwise, Vince is a little bit better rebounder. They actually had the exact same amount of assists. They had about the exact same amount of steals. Vince had more block shots. Donovan turned it over because he played with the ball in his hands more. But otherwise, they're very similar. Very, very similar. It's an interesting comp. They're both old, too, 23 and 22. So kind of interesting. All right, that wasn't entirely where I was planning to go. Today's show is brought to you in part by my friends over at Iron Gate Global Advisors. Iron Gate Global Advisors. Spencer Nelson, former Utah State star, tells us why when he had his choice of where he was going to go work, he chose Iron Gate Global Advisors.
I'd like to introduce you to Iron Gate Global Advisors Financial Group out of Salt Lake City. I found out about them from Spencer Nelson, former Utah State Aggie, great basketball player. And beyond his jump shot, he's got an MBA. He's worked in private equity. He's got experience working in Wall Street, accounting and financing degrees. And he's now working with Iron Gate Financial. And here's why.
As I evaluated my options and looked at different firms, it became clear to me that the real question I needed to ask was, who would I trust managing my portfolio? And as I got to know Brett and I got to know Brian, I was able to see how they differentiate themselves from so many other wealth management firms and the real value that they create. And it was clear to me that I wanted to work with them.
Brian's a long-term financial expert. Brett, who's been in the business forever, has got an options background. They have a strategy, a direction, and a process. And most importantly, as a small firm, they understand your journey.
If you'd like to find out more about Iron Gate, give Spencer a call at 888-591-0334. That's 888-591-0334 or email him at spencer@igga.com. Anytime we're talking investing, understand that past performance isn't indicative of future results. Also, options may not be for everyone. They have different risks. Make sure you consult a professional before doing anything with them. Do your due diligence.
All right, definitely the Donovan Mitchell deep dive is going to become a two-day show, I think. But let's look at some of the splits on Donovan, see if there's anything of interest there. We have this kind of progression that we look at here on Donovan, on all of our players, and Donovan's is just a little longer. So this will be day one, and we'll look at playmaking and things of that nature. The exciting one on Donovan is just, again, another season progression. 18 points a game in December, 21 in November, January 28, February 26, March 25, and April 28. So he got better as the year went on. His post-All-Star break numbers against lesser opponents, 27 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, shooting 46% from the field and 45% from three. The foot had caused him. Dennis Lindsay opened his press conference talking about how he wasn't in quite as good a shape to start the year. His offseason had led him with some of the foot problems and that this will be a better year for him. So I thought that was interesting. One of the things I admired about Donovan is no days rest. He was pretty darn good. 26 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. All those kind of effort, energy things. He was better against the Eastern Conference than the Western Conference by a good margin. 46% against the East, 42 against the West, and 4 percentage points better overall in his three-point shooting. His true shooting percentage was better as well. So kind of an interesting little note there on Donovan. The playoff numbers obviously were not great. He shot 32% in the playoffs this year, 26% from three, and 37% effective field goal percentage. So that was a little bit of a disappointment, I'm sure, for Donovan. And I'm sure he's, you know, that's going to drive him. That's what makes him great. All right, let's look at the impact of Donovan on the team, on and off the court. I mean, this team was pretty reliant on Donovan. There's no question about that. His usage rate was in the 93rd percentile of all players. The offense was 1.4 points better with him on the floor, and the defense was similar with him on and off the floor. Compare him to last year, his usage rate, as I said, up a little bit. Points per scoring attempt about the exact same. Assist rate about the exact same. Assist to usage about the same. Turnovers about the same. I mean, there's a lot of common things. But let me make sure this is really clear about players in their – players that are great in year one are not supposed to take a jump year one to year two. They take their jump year two to year three. The biggest thing that happened to Donovan is his two-point shooting was much less good. And when you, I've done a research project on what has to happen for Donovan to become efficient, and he has got to stop taking as many twos as he took. And particularly the short mid-range two. He was in the 93rd percentile of players short in the paint floater type shots. 29% of his shots up from 19% of his shots. It was just that was a big change in his game. And not frankly to his benefit. He's shooting percentage in those went from 38 to 36. He's in the 36th percentile in shooting and the 93rd percentile in attempts. He doesn't draw fouls when he does that. He only drew 45 fouls all year in those circumstances where he's just drawing, you know, in half as many shots, he's drawing more fouls when he gets to the rim. His long twos are about the same. His shooting percentage was a little bit better on his long twos. It's the short two that really was the change. He is corner three. He just had an kind of just came back to life. He's above the break three, though. Huge change. He goes from 32% to 37%. He's actually in the 80th percentile now of above the break three-point shooters. That's a pretty neat little change there on Donovan. That's a big game-changing number for him. As he makes that above the break, it's going to open up more things. As he plays with hopefully more of a spread floor, it'll open more things up as well. Part of the reason why he might be taking so many floaters, it took 431 compared to 249, is the fact that he doesn't have a lot of room on the floor. You know, it'll be interesting to kind of dig into Donovan's numbers based on who's on the floor with him, which maybe we'll do as time goes on. What is the impact of Donovan on the floor versus off the floor? So the offense, the biggest thing is the free throw rate drops without him. I mean, this team is totally dependent on him. The turnover numbers actually go way up when he's off the floor. The team shooting takes less above the break threes and more of those mid-range shots because he's using almost all the possessions. The half-court offense, though, was 1.4 points better with him on the floor, 66th percentile. Actually, 72.5 points better, 73rd percentile. So that's vital. I mean, he's just vital to everything we do. There's nothing like, I'm not going to break any banks here. We all know this. They have to have him. Half-court defense was not as good with Donovan on the floor this last year than it was with him off the floor. We'll dig into part two of this. All right, let's look at his pick and roll stuff as well as his the next thing we look is kind of his offensive style. Pick and roll, isolation, drives, those kind of things. So, and this is where I think you see that little mid-range shot kind of coming into a little bit of a issue. So Donovan this year on pick and rolls was 0.91 points per pick and roll. He ran the most on the team, 2,300, then Joe at 1,700, then Rubio at 1,700. He was the least efficient. He and Favors just don't connect. He and Favors were 0.81 points per pick and roll, where he and Gobert were 0.92 points per pick and roll. Jay Crowder, and he didn't really have a connection. He and Joe on some of those interchanges actually worked pretty well. And the best pick and roll, actually best pick and roll for the team, was when Donovan and Ricky kind of played interchange and got people to switch a little bit. If we take a look at and split the season, you know, again, this is a little misleading on us because we got to be honest about the schedule. But if we were to take and split the season as February 1 to and on Donovan, it's worth taking a look at. So the difference, you feel like he got much better as the year went on his pick and roll stuff, and he actually didn't. So that to me jumps out a little bit. You kind of split his pick and rolls in half. He's 0.895 in the second half of the season, and he was actually a little bit better in some of his pick and rolls earlier in the season. So worth, I don't know what that, but this is just he's not, let's remember this about Donovan, not a natural point guard, wasn't the go-to guy until the final like 12 games in Louisville, wasn't playing with the ball in his hands a lot. So though this is just, let's understand where he is. We're talking about a guy who compared with Vince Carter, who's going into the Hall of Fame in his second year. So this is all good. This is where I get nervous about this show is we're going to dig into these numbers. Some of these numbers aren't pleasant. This is where he grows from year two to year three. Year one to year two growth is not expected on a player that was as great as he was in year one. So year two to year three, this is where that growth happens a little bit. Where does Donovan rank as a pick and roll ball handler? This is obviously, we just talked about, this is not a strength of his. And so if we were to kind of look at Donovan pick and roll, ball handler picks this year, and we're going to take the top 100 guys who ran pick and roll. So everybody ran over 600 picks this year. That's a lot. And look at their points. You can do it off either one of two ways, directly off the pick and roll. And Donovan, out of those 100 players, ranks, let me see if I can find him. We have 99 players here. And Donovan's pick and roll is the ball handler. Not finding him. I'm certain that we have. Sorry, let me just do one thing. Ball handler team will be easier for me to find it that way. So Donovan ran the eighth most amount of pick and rolls of anyone in the league. Rubio ranked 16th. Ingles ranked 30th. And Donovan ranked 51st. So of the 100 pick and roll guys, Donovan was just right in the middle on points. Now, if you play it out, they have a different way to look at this metric. It's point per chance, which is kind of if the play continues to develop, takes multiple actions off of it, he slips down a little bit to 65th. So he's middle of the pack in efficiency on the top. The top five, by the way, Dame Lillard, Lou Williams, Kemba Walker, Eric Bledsoe, James Harden. Ryan Arch E. Diannakado from Chicago, pretty good. Derek White as well, so pretty interesting to see them. Might have to do a whole point guard deep dive as well. Looking at the drive numbers on Donovan Mitchell, let's do the same kind of thing on the drive numbers on Donovan. So Donovan was fifth in the league in drives. Again, if we take the top 100 players in drives, that's anybody who had more than 360 drives in the season. As I said, Donovan was the fourth or fifth most of the 100. Donovan ranks 80th in efficiency out of the top 100 drive guys. Right there with Reggie Jackson, Dennis Schroeder, and Donovan Mitchell are all together. That's where he's got to bust out of. That's got to be the change. He can't be Dennis Schroeder and he can't be Reggie Jackson. Like, those are inefficient offensive players that are not that Donovan has to be better than. Donovan drove 24 times per 100 possessions, and that's, you know, very much the essence of where his game has to improve. All right, we'll look at the final few notes on Donovan, and then we'll continue a little bit tomorrow. And any questions you guys might have, email me at dlock@09@gmail.com. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. Oh, the Blazer is back. I can't wait till I get to drive it. The Blazer is back. The SUV lineup at Murdoch Chevy is so great right now. First of all, you know the great Suburban, and you know the Tahoe. Those are, like, there are staples that are Chevy that you know. The Silverado truck, the Colorado truck, the 2018 Silverado All-Star Edition, by the way, up to $14,000 off right now. Then, it's the Murdoch $1 Million sales event for May, and so this is why you get to take advantage of these. You buy any new Chevy in May, you receive a $1,000 check. The 2019 Equinox is at $8,500 off. I've lost my train of thought because their deals are so amazing at the Murdoch $1 Million sales event. All right, so the SUV lineup's amazing. You know about the Tahoe. You know about the Suburban. Then there's the new Blazer. There's the Traverse, which is really cool. It's got the third row seats, all sorts of extra bells and whistles to it. The Equinox I drove recently, really, really liked it. Mid-sized SUV, very quiet. Really well built, great touch system up front. That's the one I just mentioned to you that is $8,500 off right now up on the Chevy Equinox 2019 LT. Nice four-door, zippy, good power, consistent power when you punch it. Really, really like that car as well. The Chevy Blazer looks sporty. I don't know if you've seen one out there, but they are good-looking cars right now. Check it all out. It's the million, the big event at Murdoch, $1 Million May, or the Murdoch Million May. Alliteration screws me up. Murdoch Million May Murdoch sales event. 2019 May Murdoch Million. Blah, blah, blah. You say it 10 times fast. It's all at Murdoch Chevy, Woods Cross, as well as in Layton. All right, let's continue with the Donovan deep dive. Hopefully you find this interesting. And the last part is isolation game, which is a little bit different than the drive game, but not entirely different. Donovan was not a heavy isolation user. If you look at where Donovan ranked in isolation this year, we don't do it much. So one-on-one, go isolation, not off the drive is not something that we do a great deal. We did it more with him in the playoffs. And if you look again at the top 100 drive guys, they've all had about 96 drives. So, I mean, it's not a lot. It's one a game. You almost kind of have to. The drive thing is there's so few guys that actually drive that you almost have to. Donovan ran the 36 most amount of drives. You almost have to take it kind of the top 75 and 70 guys because really you're just kind of out. Guys don't run. But anyway, top 100 guys. And Donovan ranks about 77th, right where Chris Paul has slipped to. Actually, interesting, De'Aaron Fox is right there, Russell Westbrook, Rodney Hood. So 77th out of 100. So in the pick stuff, he's right in the middle. In the drive stuff, he's on the bottom end and of the isolation. And I think it all stems back to that two we talked about, that floater two. He's not good at it. He takes it a huge amount. It's what separates him from being an efficient player offensively compared to the other guys in the end. That if he's going to become an efficient player, and I'll dig into this tomorrow for you, and compare him to those players whose points gained were positive. Donovan's points gained last year was a minus one. And the biggest thing that jumps out, you'll see, is the shot distribution. There's just not anybody other than Ben Simmons who has the same shot distribution as Donovan that is able to be efficient. And that, to me, is the big issue when we dig into where Donovan's going and where he's heading and how he's got to improve and figure out what his game is. And this is where I started this conversation a little bit. That height issue is real. He's 6'3", he's a little small. Like when we're talking about Vince Carter's 6'5", 6'6", get over the top of someone. He's going to have to figure out how is he navigating that 8-foot shot and turning it into something else, or Nash dribbling out the other side, or what's he going to be able to limit that shot in his repertoire. It's a low percentage shot. It's for a low percentage shot for everyone in the league. And if you go back and actually look at Dame's career, which is a comp that is either fair or unfair, but if you look at Dame's career, Dame opened his career as a not very good rim finisher in his first 2 years. He was 53% his first year, 51% his second year. And his answer was to kind of do something similar. He increased the amount of shots he was taking in that 3 to 10 foot area. He went from 6% of his shots to 10% of his shots in that 3 to 6 foot area from year one to year two. That it's kind of a natural reaction. Donovan went from 23% of his shots to 24% of his shots. So that's a huge, no wait, that's sorry. That was in the playoffs where he really got, but let's look at the regular season. He went from 15% of his shots to 24% of his shots. That's a big difference. 15 to 24% of his shots in that range. If you compare him to Dame, Dame went from 6 to 10. Now Dame's back down to 7% of his shots there. He just has figured out, and he's figured out how to stay at the rim now at 30% of Dame's shots are at the rim. Donovan went from 26% of his shots at the rim to 21% of his shots at the rim, which is a lower number than Dame's ever been at any point in his career. So that number, 21, 22% of his shots at the rim, is not a great number for Donovan's future. In fact, it's not. He cannot be taking 24% of his shots as floaters and 22% of his shots at the rim. That has to change. He's 62% at the rim, and he's 34% on a floater. Like, it's just a dramatic difference. And for him to, that, his shot distribution got out of whack, this season. And that's probably the primary thing. It's not uncommon, though. That's my point, is that, you know, here, field goal percentage by distance, Dame goes 53, 51, then he gets it up to 64, back to 55, back to 60 in his next years. He finds the way to get to the rim. He finds the way to be successful there. And that's what Donovan's going to have to figure out. Some of this is still, you know, some of the reasons why we were so fortunate to get Donovan in the draft, the reason Donovan slipped to where he did, one was he didn't have a natural position, didn't have a natural height, and he was a 2-foot jumper. Those were probably, and then the mistake, I think, is that he wasn't a natural shooter, and he's turned out to be that. In many ways. Tomorrow we'll continue to look at Donovan. We'll look at his catch and shoot, his open shooting. We'll take a little bit more of a shot distribution. We'll try to compare his QSQ and shot distribution to other point guards, kind of digging more into what we're talking about here. And we'll compare him to other guards in the league and where that shot distribution is to understand what he has to do to become a more efficient offensive player. That is our deep dive on Donovan today. That is our Monday edition. Thanks to Iron Gate Global Financial and Global Advisors, and thanks to our good friends over at Murdoch Chevy. It is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Locked On NBA is the Monday edition with the biggest stories from the local experts. It's a great recap of the weekend, both on the NBA and NFL. Go check it out on Locked On NBA and Locked On NFL. Locked On MLB has got Sully having a good time with you every day as well. It's all part of the Locked On Podcast Network.